best tunes of all move to Carnegie Hall. Yes, the best tunes of all move to Carnegie Hall.
The best tunes of all move to Carnegie Hall. Yes, the best tunes of all move to Carnegie Hall.
It's half past eight.
It's half past eight, New York time. Time to wake up America and stump the experts. Each week at this time, you are invited to test your wits against those of a quartet of almost know-it-alls. You provide the questions, and our experts try to answer them. Remember, for every question used, Lucky Strike will give you not only $10 in war stamps, but a set of the 12-volume Britannica Junior Encyclopedia. If the question is muffed, you get the Junior Britannica, plus a $50 war bond, plus a 24-volume set of the regular Encyclopedia Britannica.
The best tunes of all move to Carnegie Hall. Yes, the best tunes of all move to Carnegie Hall.
Send your questions to Information, Please, 480 Lexington Avenue, New York City. If our editorial staff edits your questions a bit, don't fret over it. In case of similarity, we'll have to be sole judge of who shall be paid, and all questions become the property of Information, Please.
The best tunes of all move to Carnegie Hall. Yes, the best tunes of all move to Carnegie Hall.
And now light up a lucky strike as I present our master of ceremonies, book reviewer of the New Yorker magazine, Clifton Fadiman. Mr. Fadiman.
Thank you, Mr. Fadiman. Ladies and gentlemen, spontaneous and unrehearsed as ever, Information, Please offers tonight that pair of intellectual giants, Franklin P. Adams and his colleague, John Kieran of the New York Sun and other papers. The charm of the evening will be provided by another equally famous pair, the co-authors of the bestseller, Our Hearts Were Young and Gay, Miss Emily Kimbrough, and her colleague, also famous as a dramatic artist, Miss Cornelia Otis Skinner. Now, we're going to begin with a question from G.A. Thomas of Frederick, Maryland, and it's about dreams that occurred in works of literature or art. Name the works in which these dream sequences occurred. Let's get two out of three. In the first case, a very well-behaved little girl dreams a series of odd adventures. In what book does that occur, Miss Kimbrough?
Alice in Wonderland.
Alice in Wonderland. Yes, you see, this is a very, very easy sort of game we play, Miss Kimbrough. Here is another. Two children dream about angelic visitors. In what work does that occur? Dream about angels. Two children. Mr. Adams.
That might be a Du Maurier book.
I don't think it is.
Peter Ibbotson.
No, there is a dream, long dream sequence there, but I don't think they dream about angels. No, it's in...
Uncle Tom's Cabin.
Uncle Tom's Cabin? Well, you
I
mean...
I dream about the angels there.
Who does?
Little Eva.
No. She goes up to heaven as an angel, doesn't she?
Yes.
Yes, there you are. She doesn't dream about them.
Well, I surrender.
Well, it's in Humperdinck's opera and also the story of Hansel and Gretel, where the two little children in front of the house... Remember it, Miss Kimbrough, now?
Yes, very well.
Very well. Now we have to get the next one if we're to... Not to give Mr. Morgenthau a $50 war bond. A little girl dreams about sheep bleating. A little girl dreams about sheep bleating. Yes, Miss Skinner.
Little Bo Peep.
Little Bo Peep, yes. Can you prove it by giving us the stanza in which
she
does it?
Lost her sheep and didn't know where to find them.
True.
Little Bo Peep fell fast asleep and dreamt she heard they were... bleeding.
Heard them bleeding.
But when she woke, she found it a joke, for they were still a-bleeding.
Very good, Miss Skinner. That's exactly right. That gives us two out of three. And now one from Mrs. H.O. Porter of Jacksonville, Florida. On this card, it tells me that the modern young woman has gone back to her grandmother's wardrobe, thing I had not noticed. And I want you to name for us at least four articles or styles that are a throwback to earlier times. Now, anything you say, I will have to accept, Miss Kimbrough.
The snood.
The what?
The hair. The snood.
What
little,
is that?
Well, it's a rather heavy net.
Why do they wear it?
The hair in place.
It does?
Yes. And that's definitely a throwback.
That's a throw. When did grandmothers wore that?
Yes.
When they were girls?
Yes.
But why do they wear that now?
Hold the hair up.
I mean, why does it take them 50 years to think of it again?
Because they're getting hair back.
Oh, that's it. Now I do understand. A snoo. Very well. Now another. Let's have three more articles. Mr. Adams, do you get the idea of this question?
I get the idea, but that was before my time.
Miss Skinner?
Well, there's a kind of a hat that's become stylish called a boater, which was also smart in the 90s. Just a small, roundish hat like an English sailor's hat. A straw, turned-up thing, and it's called a boater.
It's called a boater. And they wear that, too? Snoods and Boaters. Boaters and Snoods. All right, that gives us two. I'd like to get two more. Mr. Kieran, does this stimulate
Indeed
you?
Indeed not.
Yes, Miss Kieran.
Your petticoats, believe it or not, are coming back.
Yes, I believe them. I haven't. Why? I don't see why you should think that I'm skeptical.
Silk petticoats?
Mm-hmm.
But surely not with silk as difficult to get as it is.
Well, they call it silk. It's some kind of a material.
I know something is coming back.
Mr. Adams.
Cotton stockings.
Yes, cotton stockings. That is true. Our grandmothers, I understand, used to wear cotton stockings, and so are their granddaughters. Well, that gives us at least three. On my card, I have one, something called a barrel muff. What is a barrel muff?
Yes, that's
Miss Kimbrough?
It's a small muff. Looks like a diminutive barrel.
It does?
Yes.
And they've gone back to that, too.
Yeah.
And how, is there anything else you can think of? I guess we do have four already with Miss Skinner's suggestion. Flannel nightgowns, are they wearing those again?
Long sleeve nightgowns.
They are?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And isn't there a hairdo known as the pompadour?
Yes.
You see, I do know something about this after all. Now, how about this one for Mrs. W.T. Roberts of Tacoma, Washington? I'm going to ask you to sing, it says here, sing a song that expresses the idea or sentiment found in these lines of poetry. In other words, I'm going to give you three lines of poetry, one after the other, as is our custom, and you are going to sing for me anything that expresses the same notion or idea as the line of poetry. Here's the first. Be good, sweet maid, and let who can be clever. Now, is there any song in which somewhat the same idea is expressed? Miss Kimbrough.
Lady, be good to me.
Yes. Well, you wouldn't care to give us a little rendition. Miss Skinner, perhaps, will help you.
I don't know the words.
I can't remember how it begins.
Lady, be good.
Oh. Lady, be good. Oh, lady, be good to me.
Yes. I may say, Miss Kimbrough, that we're not quite used to so high a standard on this program. That's very good. Now, here's another line of poetry to match with a song. If music be the food of love, play on. If music be the food of love, play on. I should say almost any song that had to do with music would be all right as an equivalent. Doesn't have to have anything to do with food. Think of one, Miss Skinner?
Not that it has anything to do with music.
How
about tea for two?
Well, it has to do with food, yes.
A pretty girl is like a melody.
Yes, that would be a very good one. Or perhaps say it with music, very simply. Any of those would do. Now, here's a line from Maysfield that's familiar to most people. I must go down to the sea again, to the lonely sea in the sky. Miss Skinner and Mr. Kieran are going to give us a duet.
Anchors away, my boy.
Thank you. That's very good.
How about Rocked in the Cradle of the Deep?
Yes, that's a very good one. Rocked in the Cradle of the Deep? Okay. That gives us three out of three and sends us on to a question from Edward R. Cook of Far Rockaway, Long Island. What would you get, ladies and gentlemen, if you asked a waiter for these foods? I'm going to give you the literal translation from the French or Italian that appears on the menu, and you tell me what the food is really called in its original language. If the literal translation is outside the works, what do you get? Outside the works, Miss Kimbrough.
Hors d'oeuvres.
Yes, and what are hors d'oeuvres?
Hors d'oeuvres are the preliminaries before the works begin.
Yes, that's very true. They're an involved method of taking away your appetite. Now, if the literal translation were good goods, you would get what? Mr. Kieran.
Candy.
Yes.
Bonbon.
Yes.
Bonbon.
Bonbon. Very good. Oh, we try.
Bonbon, body the chocolate drop.
We say goodies, don't we, too, as a kind of translation of it, the same way. And if you got something, if you ordered something called literally beautiful country, what would it be? Miss Skinner.
Belpaese
cheese, yes, an Italian cheese, and very good, too. How about this one from Edith V. Weeks of Ogden, Utah? Recite for us three lines in which the word worm, W-O-R-M, appears. Mr. Kieran.
Not where he eats, but where he is eaten. A certain convocation of politic worms are in at him.
Hey,
that is Hamlet giving a hint as to where Polonius's corpse may be found.
Yes, that's a perfect response. Miss Kimbrough.
Men have died and worms have eaten them, but not for love.
The word's out of my mouth, Dad.
What's it from, Miss Kimbrough?
That's from As You Like It.
Good enough. And, Miss Skinner, did you have a
I was going to say, should that concealment like a worm in the bud feed on a demonstration?
Is a bud.
Yep.
Is
the bud.
Is the bud.
Is the bud, yes. That's right. There are three worms, and I should say that's enough.
There's another one. Oh, well, that's funny.
Well, all right. Can you think of one more, Mr. Kern?
Yes, nothing but the still small worm fretteth thy an enshrouded form. That's from a minor poem by Tennyson.
I haven't the slightest doubt.
And a weather prediction. Fair and warmer.
Fair and warmer. And now here are Mr. Cross and Mr. Risedale.
The best tunes of all move to Carnegie Hall. Yes, the best tunes of all move to Carnegie Hall.
Ladies and gentlemen, make no mistake. In a cigarette, it's the tobacco that counts. And Lucky Strike means fine tobacco. So round, so firm, so fully packed, so free and easy on the draw. No wonder that with independent tobacco experts, with men who know tobacco best, it's Lucky's 2-1.
Thank you, Mr. Risedale and Mr. Cross. And now a question from Irene Hughes of Syracuse, New York. Suppose you heard a group of youngsters calling out these words. What would they be doing? I spy. I spy. Mr. Adams.
They would be playing I spy.
And would you like to explain what the game is?
Well, it's a game in which one person hides his eyes, usually like this, near a tree. And then he says, ready or not, you shall be caught, and so forth. And the kids hide and frequently are caught.
What fun it must be for you, Mr. Adams. Yes. Now, suppose you heard this phrase. Last one in is a rotten egg. What would the kids be doing, Mr. Kieran?
Down at the old swimming hole.
Yes, and...
Unshedding their clothes.
That's right. And suppose you heard, cheese it, the cops. Miss Skinner?
Well, just playing on the street, I suppose.
Well, but particularly what? Not just
cops
playing on the street.
Robbers.
No.
Have a care, the police are on fire.
Well, you'd be playing, they'd be playing any game that's
any
forbidden.
Game.
Any game that's forbidden, there are some games that are okay, but if the game is forbidden, why, you cheese at the cops. I didn't expect that anyone as well
the
brought up as you would
know that. Pursuit.
How about this from Richard Deturk of Garden City, New York? Here's a Shakespearean question, I think rather a tough one. Now, in the tragedy of Macbeth, the following people are killed: Banquo, Duncan, Macduff's wife and children, and Macbeth himself. I want you to tell me in what order they died and who was the killer of each. You have to get this exactly right, Mr. Kieran.
All right, I'll start with Duncan.
Killed first.
He died first.
Killed by whom?
He was killed by Macbeth with a little aid from his wife.
Yes, a little brain work. From
yes. Him. Well, the next one who died was... What's that on the name?
Banquo, Macduff's wife and children, and Macbeth himself.
Banquo.
Banquo
the next one who was killed. And
who did the killing?
The killing was done by a couple of hired murderers at the instigation of Macbeth.
Yes. Were there several murderers, or was there just one in the case?
There were two murderers, and along came a third fellow who was a stand-in. And the next one who died, the next ones who died were Macduff's wife and children, all of them at one fell swoop.
Yes.
All his pretty chickens and their dam, as he put it. D-A-M. And
that's
the last one to die was Macbeth, who was...
Who did the murdering of Macduff's wife and children? I want to get these gory details straight.
Well, some skunks who were sent there by by Macbeth.
You're still sore about it, are you,
yes.
Karen?
Then Macbeth had his separation...
Papers.
Yeah. His head was separated from his shoulders by Mr. Macduff in person.
Yes, that's a perfect response. Thank you very much. It really is a complicated set of assassinations to keep straight in your mind. Now, how about this one from Miss M.M. Gardner of Baltimore? Why would these ladies of literature fail to qualify for these services? For example, why would Kate Pinkerton not be able to get into the wave? Of course, you have to know who Kate Pinkerton is. That's the catch here. Mr. Adams.
Was Kate Pinkerton in Vanity Fair?
No, I don't think so. Unless
Miss
she's
Pinkerton
moved.
Was.
Who?
Miss Somebody Pinkerton.
It wasn't this Kate Pinkerton. Kate Pinkerton is who? Well, isn't there an opera about Japan or something of that sort in which there's a Pinkerton?
Yes. Right.
Yes. Now, what was
Madam Butterfly.
That's right. Now, how, Miss Skinner?
She couldn't have gotten in because she was the wife that Pinkerton brought back, didn't she?
No, no. Her husband was in the Navy.
Yes, I know, but her husband was Pinkerton.
Her husband was Pinkerton, and he was in the Navy. Now, if your husband is in the Navy, you cannot get in the waves.
No.
That's one of the rules that the waves have laid down. Just why that should be so, I don't know. Perhaps you can think of some reason for it. Now, why, we got that one wrong, didn't we? Now, why wouldn't Mrs. Pepper be able to get into the wax? Mrs. Pepper. Who is Mrs. Pepper? Miss Skinner.
Well, is that the mother of five little Peppers?
Yes,
it
is.
Brew, and you can't have five children and be in the wax.
Oh, I don't know. No, I think you could have five children and be in the wax. But you'd have to be something of a prodigy. If you have a child under 14, she had five children
five
under 14, remember?
Yes.
And so she couldn't be in the wax. Now, how about Jane Baxter? Why wouldn't she be able to get into the spars? Jane Baxter? Who is Jane Baxter? Mr. Curran, I detect a glimmer there somewhere.
A reflection from somebody else.
No doubt from our guest.
Any relation to William Sylvanus Baxter?
Yes. Yes, indeed. Adams. Pardon?
Probably a sister. She was too young.
Yes, she was too young. Well, I think that's the only absolutely correct answer. She's the 10-year-old sister and 17 by Booth Tarkington. And that sends a $50 war bond to Miss Gardner and a set of the Encyclopedia Britannica, courtesy of Lucky Strike, and sends us on to a question from Isabel M. Jacobs of Philadelphia. Who or what might be appropriately dressed in this fashion? Suppose the person were dressed, dressed, whatever you call it, with green eye shadow, in a russet brown gown, and wearing emerald earrings. What sort of person would be appropriately thus dressed? Well, it puzzles me, too. Miss Skinner?
There was a short story.
No, it isn't a single person.
Oh.
It isn't an individual.
Oh.
It's a type of person, as it were. What sort of person would dress that way?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Unless you do know of some special person who was dressed that way. Well, the answer is a red-headed lady. A red-headed lady would dress in a russet brown gown, wear emerald earrings, and have green eyeshadow under or over wherever one wears green eyeshadow.
You mean in russet mantle plaid?
Yes, in russet mantle plaid. A red-headed lady. Now, what would be dressed in this fashion? By adding a cherry, a slice of orange, and a piece of pineapple. Mr. Kieran.
An old-fashioned.
An old-fashioned, yes. An old-fashioned consists mainly of what, Mr. Kieran?
Of whiskey.
Of whiskey, yes. And the rest of it is just the
And the rest of it
food.
Is no good.
The rest of it is no good. That's true enough. Now, what might be appropriately dressed by removing nearly everything? I see that stumps you. Mr. Adams.
Lady Godiva.
No, I said what might be.
Oh.
Mr. Kieran.
Oh, I thought you said who. I was going to say champion swimmer.
Yes, yes.
That's again who.
But what might be appropriately dressed by having nearly everything removed? Well, a fowl, wouldn't you say, Miss Kimbrough? Yes, I should think a fowl. I guess we got that wrong. That would send a $50 war bond to Miss Jacobs and a set of the Britannica. How about this one from M.G. Lynch of New York City? I want you to recite for us a line that includes these words, or sets of words. The first is, lean and hungry. Lean and hungry. Miss Kimbrough.
Oh, perhaps I may be sorry. I don't think so. Yon Cassius wears a lean and hungry look.
Very good.
Hat.
Yes, it's from what play?
Julius Caesar.
From Julius Caesar. Very good, Miss Kimbrough. Now, here's another set of words. Fat and greasy. Fat and greasy. Does that come back to any of you? It's from Shakespeare, too. Miss Skinner.
It's probably from Merriwise Windham.
No, I can
probably
see the association.
Henry IV.
No, name a few more.
Greasy Joan does keel the...
That gives us greasy, but I don't think she's not mentioned as being fat. Mr. Kieran?
I thought it might come from Julius Caesar.
Oh, yes, it does.
I don't think it is.
No, there's
there's a nasty rabble? Description of the citizens. It's from As You Like It.
Oh, wait a minute.
How about
the description Karen? Of the fat and greasy citizens? The melancholy Jakeways speaks the piece where the deer run off and leave the wounded comrade.
That's right. I think you ought to get 100% on that, Mr. Kieran. That's pretty good. I sweep on, you fat and greasy citizens. 'Tis just the fashion. How about Short and Simple? Short and Simple, Mr. Adams.
Annals of the Poor.
Annals of the Poor. From what?
From Elegy Written in a Country Church.
Very good. Well, that gives us 3 out of 3. And now here are Mr. Risedale and Mr. Cross.
The best tunes of all move to Carnegie Hall. Yes, the best tunes of all move to Carnegie Hall.
Ladies and gentlemen, the story of what makes a better cigarette can be told in just 2 words. Fine tobacco. For in a cigarette, it's the tobacco that counts. And smokers, Lucky Strike means fine tobacco. At auctions all over the South, year after year, we consistently select and buy the riper, lighter, milder Lucky Strike leaf. No wonder that with independent experts, with men who know tobacco best, it's Lucky's 2-to-1. In choosing your own cigarette, take a tip from the experts. Remember, Lucky Strike means fine tobacco. So round, so firm, so fully packed, so free and easy on the draw.
Thank you, Mr. Cross and Mr. Risedale. And now a question from William E. Wiggin of Brookline, Massachusetts. What play ends with these stage directions? There are going to be 3 of them. Quote, a rotten shingle falls from the sagging porch and the curtain falls slowly. As dreary an ending as I have ever heard. It ends what play? Miss Skinner.
It's probably Tobacco Road.
It is. It's Tobacco Road, yes. That's the way Tobacco Road ends. If it ever ended, did it ever end?
Not yet.
And here is another last stage direction. A dead march, exeunt bearing off the dead bodies, after which a peal of ordnance is shot off. What play ends thus? Mr. Kieran.
Is that Hamlet?
Hamlet is right, yes. That's very good, Mr. Kieran. And here is the third and last stage direction. They embrace, but they do not know the secret in the poet's heart. Miss Skinner.
Candida.
Candida, yes. How does one express on the stage the...
I don't know. I tried for a season.
Very tough one. How about this from Russell Newcomb of New York City? In a typical crew of 8 men in an American bombing plane, list the functions of the men and where they sit. That's an interesting question. Let's see if we can get it right. Let's begin furthest forward, shall we? Mr. Kieran, will you start us off?
Well, I haven't seen they shift those diagrams around. I don't know whether they have a... I don't think they have a gunner ahead of the pilot.
Well, what's in a large American bomber?
There is a pilot and a co-pilot.
In the first part of the ship?
Well, they're up aloft there. There may be a gunner somewhere ahead
of
them.
Well, ahead of the pilot is what?
Ahead of the pilot, he sits in a clear nose. That's a plastic probably now.
But who was ahead of him? Who's in front of him in a bombing plane? Well, it's the bombardier. The bombardier sits furthest forward. Then behind him come the pilot, as Mr. Kieran reminds us, and then a crew. If there are 8 men, the pilot would have what else? Who else?
Navigator.
A co-pilot.
Well, a co-pilot. Now behind
also
the...
Also a navigator.
Navigator.
Behind the pilot and co-pilot would be the navigator and who else?
Probably 2 side gunners.
No. Navigator and... Remember, we have 8 men to account for. We've got 4 so far. The radio operator. Navigator and radio operator. Behind the pilot and co-pilot.
Radio operator probably would also be a gunner.
Well, not necessarily. Not in a crew of 8 men, although he could operate a gun in case of emergency. Now, behind the navigator and radio operator would be what? Mr. Kieran.
Well, there's a gunner on top, there's a gunner underneath, and there's a tail gunner.
Tail gunner at the back, yes. But I'm afraid we didn't get that...
We certainly hashed that one up.
Hashed that one up a bit, I think. Suppose we send a $50 war bond to Mr. Newcomb and a set of the Britannica. And here's
those
one...
boys will do all right in spite of us.
Bet they will. And here's one from Mary Boylan of Rochester. Who was terrified by these sounds? The first sound was the tapping of a blind man's stick. Miss Skinner.
That was the boy in Treasure Island, Jim Hawkins.
Yes, quite right. And who was the blind man? Remember his name?
He was Blind Bill. He brought the black spot. Blind...
He got them a little mixed up. Miss Karen?
Blind Pugh.
Yes, Old Pugh.
Oh, Blind Pugh.
Tried to get the map from Billy
Bones. Old Bill, yes.
Yes, one. That's right. Now, who was terrified by the ticking of a clock? The ticking of a clock. Yes, Mr. Kieran.
Edgar Allan Poe's hero was a watch.
Well, it was a watch, as a matter of fact, and I suppose...
It made him as big as clock.
Suppose I stick to clock and don't admit watch, because I have something in my mind.
My grandfather's clock.
Pardon? No, it was Captain Hook in Peter Pan.
Oh.
Remember
yes.
the crocodile who had the alarm clock in him? He was known as an alarm crocodile, as a matter of fact. And Captain Hook was terrified of his approach because he'd bitten off his hand. Now, who was terrified by the sound of a heart beating?
Mr. Kieran.
Oh, that was Mr. Poe's friend, although it sounded like a watch beating in cotton.
Yes. What was the name of the story in which...
The Telltale Heart.
The Telltale Heart, a terrifying story. The narrator is unnamed, as Mr. Kieran says. How about this one from Janet J. Stockbridge of Langhorne, Pennsylvania? Who were these ladies, of fact or fiction? The first one traveled in masculine attire and called herself Count Drona. D-R-O-H-N-A. Who was that? Not an easy question.
Rosalind.
No, but it's a nice guess. Miss Skinner.
Who is that, Lola Montez?
No, though she did travel in masculine attire sometimes. Miss Skinner? No, this one was a real person. Queen Christina of Sweden, who lived in the 17th century. Now, another lady, also a lady of fact, traveled about in armor and was once wounded in the shoulder. Who was that? Miss Skinner.
Joan of Arc.
Joan of Arc, yes. And Miss Kimbrough had a hand up, too. Now, how about this one who was discovered on a battlefield in infancy and grew up with the army and traveled with it? Who was that? Discovered on a battlefield in infancy?
Daughter of the regiment.
Daughter of the regiment, yes. Remember her name, Mr. Adams? That's very good.
Nope.
Who wrote the book? Mr. Kieran, remember?
It's an opera.
Well, isn't it a book by Ouida? O-U-I-D-A, originally Miss Kimbrough, am I right about that? And the heroine's name was Marie. Well, we did get 2 out of 3 on that, and that's all we'll have time for. Thank you, Miss Kimbrough and Miss Skinner, for adding to the fun tonight. In a few seconds, I'll announce next week's guest. Tonight, Lucky Strike has paid out 3 sets of the Encyclopedia Britannica and 3 $50 war bonds. And speaking of bonds, would you like me to read to you the plea of an American... now interned in a Japanese torture chamber, politely known as a concentration camp. Here's what he says. Do not let them forget us. Tell America what they have done to us. Don't let our suffering be in vain. Ask them to build ships and buy bonds and fight in our name. If our suffering can bring a quicker victory, it's not wasted. If they know what's in store for them if they lose... dear Lord, how they will fight. Now, next week, in addition to our terrific trio, the old Kieran Adams Levant combination, we announce as our guest, our good friend, the creator of Mrs. Miniver, Jan Struther. Remember to send your letters with questions. Don't forget to send the correct answers, too,